Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. The football season is over, as you witnessed on Saturday night. Luke Jones joins us now to sort of, try to put all this together. And, all the conversation we've had, I don't know we've talked a whole lot about actual game and circumstance and Buffalo and wind and fans and, snapping and, like, all of that stuff. But just from a global standpoint, to look back and see that you got ousted scoring 3 points on a Saturday night in Buffalo, that won't settle well in the offseason, because no matter what, you can say you scored 3 points. I mean, you weren't going to win.
Yeah, and that's where I think, going back to the question we had kind of volleyed back and forth the last 6 weeks or so, what would constitute a successful season for the Ravens? Understanding going into the year, it was Super Bowl or bust, but when you lose your franchise left tackle, when you lose your blocking tight end in an offense where your blocking tight end is as important as this one, it really is, it becomes a relative circumstances, and that's not even getting into what happened with the COVID outbreak and being 1-4 after the bye week. So as much as you want to say, yeah, they won a playoff game, they won their last five, they exercised some demons against Tennessee, you still look at Saturday night's performance and you scored 3 points. I mean, it really leaves you lacking. It just was not a good performance from the offense and the special teams. Now, it's funny because you try to look at it and you have the perspective and you say, okay, well, if they had lost 27-24, the offense still doesn't do enough in the end. And then what are you saying? Well, your defense didn't play all that well. So what we saw on Saturday night was a terrific performance overall by the defense and a horrendous performance by the offense. So, how do you marry those two going into the offseason, knowing how many free agents you have, knowing you need to get better, you want to get better? I mean, every offseason is an opportunity to get better, but knowing it's not going to be as easy. You're not going to have as much cap flexibility. We don't know if the league's going to have as much cap flexibility, not knowing. We know the floor is what's set right around $180 million, as far as that being the minimum as far as a drop in the cap, but not knowing what the cap's actually going to be just yet. So it leaves you in a position where, look, this is still a really, really, really good football team. And I don't think that's going to change in 2021. But John Harbaugh likes to say it, and we've used this phrase at this point when the season comes to an end the last several years. He always says, you're getting better or you're getting worse. You're not staying the same. And, that's where I do go back to that question as far as how I feel about this football team now after being bounced in the divisional round compared to how I felt about it last year getting bounced in the divisional round, but it being a 14-2 year and 13 Pro Bowlers and Lamar Jackson's the league MVP. I'd be lying to you if I felt just as optimistic now as I did a year ago. But that doesn't, to be clear, before anyone overreacts to me saying that, that doesn't mean I think they're falling to 7-9 next year or anything like that. It's just, a year ago, I was thinking this could be the precursor to them winning 3 Super Bowls in the next 6 years. Now, after seeing some of the same,
I need to see them score 20 points in a game in January. What I mean?
Exactly.
They have not scored in January.
They scored 20 against the Titans, but even that game, I mean, what did we talk about the entire week? And this is something I didn't want to emphasize too much because it's like, okay, Luke, you're being overly pessimistic. And I wasn't even trying to be pessimistic. It was an observation. But we talked about how lousy, how god-awful that Titans defense was. And yeah, the Ravens ran for all those yards. They scored 20 points, though. I mean, in this day and age, it's certainly better than they did Saturday, to be clear, but that's not anything that you're bragging about or you're over the moon about. So although I will say this, we've seen, with a couple exceptions, we've seen some lower scoring games in this postseason, which, people wouldn't have necessarily anticipated. But to your overall point, it's great to score all these points and run for all these yards and Lamar Jackson setting records and this running game setting records. And you look at what they did over the last 5 weeks of the regular season. I mean, over the last 5 games of the regular season, they basically ran for as many yards as the Steelers did all season. I mean, it shows you how bad the Steelers running game was, but shows you how great and special the Baltimore rushing attack was over down the stretch. But you're right. At some point, it's not unreasonable to say, hey, when's this going to show up in January more consistently, guys? Because 2020, your season low point total, 3 against Buffalo, divisional round. 2019, your season low point total against Tennessee in the divisional round. 2018, from the time that Lamar Jackson took over week 10, I guess it was, right? Or week 11 it was. Their season low point total from that point on against the Chargers in the playoff game. So it's great to have this offense that, believe me, is a lot of fun. I mean, Lamar Jackson, if nothing else, is one of the most enjoyable football players to watch over the last over the last 25 years of Ravens football. He's right up there with any other exciting player the Ravens have ever had, if not number one on the list.
And he calls you Mister.
I mean, and that's the thing. He's so likable. His teammates love him. He's a good leader for someone who just turned 24. However, the collective product, and this is not a Lamar only thing, but he is the quarterback. You need to see this show up in January because, you know, when you keep having the same thing happening, what do we say? This team just absolutely trucks and embarrasses inferior teams, but more often than not, when they're going up against, you know, other similar teams or teams that have a good defense, or in the case of what happened with Buffalo Saturday night, a team that has a defensive-minded head coach and a really experienced defensive coordinator, Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier, they came up with a great plan, and the Ravens, they couldn't handle it. And again, that not Lamar only, it was the entire offense that couldn't handle it. So, yeah, there's some frustration there, and when you keep seeing this happening, at some point, something's got to give, right? I mean, you know, whether it's bringing in a number one wide receiver, whether it's bringing in, you know, not firing Greg Roman, but maybe you do what the Ravens did, bringing in Greg Roman when Marty Morningwig was the offensive coordinator a few years back. Maybe you bring in someone who has some new ideas with a passing game that meshes well with what they want to do with the running game. You know, maybe there is a college coach out there, you know, some coordinator that's itching for a chance to work at the next level, but isn't going to be a head coach or anything like that right now. You know, do you find that guy? And you know, 2 years ago, they famously talked about bringing in Paul Johnson and all these other college coaches that ran, you know, whether you're talking about Navy type offense or different rushing game principles, maybe they need to do something along those lines with their passing game to get it firing at a more consistent level, because, you know, you just, you know, 1 year's a fluke, 2 years, you know, okay. And by now it's a trend, right? I mean, you can't deny that. So fully acknowledging they did beat Tennessee and they did win a playoff game. So it's not as though they didn't, you know, not as though it was a total failure. I'm not suggesting that, but this is a team that was 14-2 a year ago, and they've had the best point differential in the NFL over the last 2 years. I mean, that's pretty lofty territory right there to look at those 2 years and then say you have one playoff win. You know, it's not unprecedented. I mean, look at the end of Drew Brees' NFL career and some of the earlier than expected exits the Saints have had the last few years. You know, it happens to the best of them. It happens to a Hall of Fame quarterback, as it did with Drew Brees these last few years. But you do look at it, and that's where you ask the question, and bringing it back to the cap and the lengthy list of free agents they're going to have. Where do you go from here to not just maintain what you've done, but get better? And a lot of that's going to be internal, and Lamar Jackson doing work in the offseason, and Marquise Brown doing work in the offseason, and Patrick Queen on the defensive side of the ball, which, you know, he's someone as a first round pick. I'm not going to lie. I know people look at the numbers and they see him.
He loves the way he played, by the way. Patrick Queen loves some Patrick Queen, by the way.
I've heard him say he needs to be better. He needs to be better. He was not, put it this way, I do not share the same over-the-top opinion that I've heard some people express about how well he played as a rookie. I think if you watch him play-by-play, I think you see the potential. You see the traits that the Ravens loved. I'm not disputing that, but need to see way more consistency, especially from a first-round pick, because let's face it, off-ball linebacker is not, even the you talk 20 years ago, you could argue whether that was a premium position or not when Ray Lewis was in his prime, but certainly today that's not a premium position. So you took him in the first round. I need to see him take a substantial step forward in 2021 because, as I mentioned, the Ravens are going to be losing some veterans on that defense. An edge rusher, guys on the defensive line are going to be a year older. You'd like to bring back Derek Wolf. We'll see if that works out for them. You would think they can work something out, but you know, but Calais Campbell, a year older, Brandon Williams, a year older. I mean, these are 30-somethings, and 30-somethings in football, that's a slippery slope. We know that. Mark Ingram's a great example of that this year. Pro bowler to healthy scratch by the end of the season. So
Earl Thomas went from Hall of Famer to get out.
Although that was much more personality driven then. But at the same time, his play wasn't so over the moon impressive a year ago that you were much more willing to let him go. And even
he never played, right? He was like, wasn't he going to sign somewhere?
Earl Thomas? No. Correct. I thought you were talking about, I was thinking about last year. No, he didn't play this year. Houston
dabbled,
was
right.
Interested. And then it's since been reported. The Athletic did a great piece on this. Jeff Srebeck and a number of their reporters, guys from Seattle. And I might've even been someone who knew him from his Texas days. But anyway, it sounds like they had some interest and then some players had, I think, either talk to the Ravens, some Ravens players, or talk to some Seattle players, and they weren't having it. They said, we're not bringing this guy in. Now, Houston's an absolute dumpster fire right
Dude,
now.
Dude, what's amazing, though, Watson, I mean, I can't think of a time. Antonio Brown, maybe, and he was completely, you know what I mean, like persona non grata.
That was so over the top, right.
A player of that level just pissing away his career on reputation. The fact that everyone on the organization said, you don't want that guy on your team. You know what I mean? Like, that's an amazing thing for a guy who was headed to the Hall. I can't think of anything like that where everyone who can still play gets picked up. I mean, Ed Reed got picked up twice when he couldn't play, right? Literally.
I mean, unless you're talking about the most extreme examples like Ray Rice. You know, something that, and look, I don't want to completely be dismissive of Earl Thomas's issues with his wife, because clearly TMZ just put out another article talking about, you know, there was an incident around Christmas with those two, apparently. So, I mean, you're talking about a volatile situation, and I don't want to be insensitive to be dismissive of that. But yeah, you're right. In terms of not having some over the top arrest or something along those lines, it really is kind of crazy to think Earl Thomas went from this multi-time Pro Bowl player in Seattle. We saw how that ended, clearly very ugly, on very poor terms with him and the organization, and then comes to Baltimore. And look, Earl Thomas made the Pro Bowl. Do I think he played at a Pro Bowl level? No. How often do we see that, though, with veteran players who make Pro Bowls by reputation by the end of their career? That happens all the time.
Well, what's
That's
amazing was he but. Didn't stink. No one bitched about him. We saw him in the locker room. I mean, I've seen Marcus Peters act. I've seen Marlon Humphreys act. I mean, as a media member, as a human, as a person interacting with them, I didn't think anything was particularly out of the ordinary with Earl Thomas other than him being a football player who came from somewhere else who thinks his manure doesn't stink. I'm getting more used to that the last decade around here. But I find it shocking that the Ravens went into business with a guy who couldn't get a job once they got rid of him. That's a head scratcher for me in an all-time kind of way, because Albert Bell gets employed. You know what I mean? Like, all of these people get – Greg Hardy got employed. I that really is an amazing thing that happened this year.
Well, and I think it does speak to, one, how much of a personality problem that was. And it is a credit. As much as you don't want to praise the Ravens for the fact that they clearly didn't do their homework very well on Earl Thomas before they signed him, but they managed the 2019 situation very well, because it's very evident. And look, were there some hints of that? Yeah. Remember, he had the blow up with Brandon Williams after the Cleveland game in week 4 last year. Yeah. I mean, so there were a few hints of some things of that nature, but nothing like what it ultimately turned out to be. And obviously what happened this summer, but it is wild to think that he didn't get picked up. And it does speak to what we always talk about when you're talking about players who have that extra baggage: is the juice worth the squeeze? Did he play at the same Seattle circa 2012 Earl Thomas level in 2019? No. So then when he becomes a pain in the you-know-what and his teammates can't stand him. And there's clearly some clashes, and there's not a reliability there anymore, whether it's on the practice field or showing up for meetings or what have you, then it becomes much easier to jettison the guy, even though it's going to hurt you from a cap perspective, and you're going to have a grievance and all of that. So it is interesting in that way to kind of see that.
Well, Luke, I mean, even to attach that to Tampa Bay, I was watching Tampa Bay play on Sunday night, and I'm like, they got Ndamukong Suh. They've got Antonio Brown, right? I mean, they brought Gronkowski in to be Brady's buddy at the end. And not that Gronkowski's a troublemaker, but it's sort of like they've imported the entire soul of the organization, and they're 60 minutes away from going to a Super Bowl. Yeah. You know, so to say that it's possible, or that Bruce Arians is a human whisperer, and I think he is to some degree, look like he's got like bomb packs attached to it. It's bizarre what's going on there. But they imported a franchise, and they're a heartbeat away. They can go to Green Bay, they're going to freeze their ass off, but they have a chance of going to a Super Bowl. So when you talk about importing Calais Campbell or importing Earl Thomas, or we say right now, and you and I would say this, bringing it full circle to the Ravens, Luke, the Ravens aren't good enough to win a Super Bowl right now. I don't believe that. What's going to make them good enough? I don't know. I mean, they brought a Matt Burke and an Anquan Boldin in last time, and they drafted a Ray Rice, and they What are the next 3 or 4 months? What's that going to represent for Eric? What's that mean for Matt Judon? What does that mean for Calais Campbell? What does that mean for Matt Skura? There's just a lot of moving parts for a team that had a pretty good year. I mean,
yeah, sure.
There's going to be a lot of motion in the next 3 months.
Right. I mean, there always is. I mean, these teams change so much. I mean, to even go back and look at how few guys were left from the last playoff team that had won a game, the 2014 team. You know, so we're not even talking the Super Bowl. I mean, you're talking about a handful. Yeah, in 6 years, that's how much things change. So you have quite a bit of turnover every year. And I mean, right now on my screen, I'm looking at the list of free agents they have. It's lengthy. It's lengthy every year, but you do look at some of the positions, you know, like outside linebacker. You know, Matt Skura is a free agent you would assume is going to be moving on considering how the end of the year played out. Some key special teams guys like Anthony Levine and Chris Moore and Jordan Richards. You know, as much as special teams aren't in the forefront, we know how the Ravens feel about that. So, you know, you have so many guys that you're going to have to make tough calls on. And that's even to the point we were making, that's even just maintaining what you had in 2020, not even thinking about trying to get better. And look, improvement, so much of that comes from the internal improvement of the young guys you already have on your roster. You know, Lamar Jackson's way better now than he was as a rookie. J.K. Dobbins, you hope, for as impressive as he was down the stretch, what did we see on Saturday night? He needs to get better with catching the football. You know, before you get the Ray Rice comparisons for J.K. Dobbins, he's got to catch the football more consistently.
You better make the block on the edge too to set up the touchdown. There's
that too. Although, again, like I said, I don't know the slide protection there. I don't know what was happening going back to the center position. So they certainly have their questions. Now, sitting here right now in mid-January with the start of the season being months and months and months away until we get to September, and hopefully by then we're talking about packed stadiums again and things are much better. But as I'm talking about this team now, because they have a lot of questions, to the point you just made, do I feel they're good enough to win a Super Bowl? I got to see what happens. At the same time, their floor is very high with this offense. Right now, if you ask me, at the very least, are they going to make the playoffs next year? I'll say yes and not even hesitate. But are they going to be right there with Kansas City? Are they going to be where Buffalo is right now? That's a maybe for me. I need to see what they do specifically to try to make this passing game a little bit more productive. You know, in fact, maybe more than a little bit. Maybe you know, it doesn't have to be a ton, but it needs to be more. It needs to be meaningful improvement. But what's that mean for outside linebacker then? You know, are you going to re-sign Matt Judon? Are you going to re-sign Yannick Ngakoue? Do you let both of them walk? Do you let Tyus Bowser walk? You know, I mean, you've got some important players here. I mean, some guys that are top of the roster kind of important, but also a number of depth guys that, you know, that you're really looking to. I mean, as I mentioned, 5 of their top 6 outside linebackers are not under contract for 2021. Jalen Ferguson, the one guy who is, was a healthy scratch at the end of the season. You know, so he was 6th in that pecking order. So No, who do you re-sign? Did you see enough from Yannick Ngakoue to give him a bunch of money? Or were you kind of left saying, okay, you know, this guy's a good situational rusher, but do we love him enough to give him a massive contract? I don't know. I think that's going to be one of the more interesting...
I didn't feel difference maker at all with him. Yeah, I don't even know what number he is.
Yeah, well, I mean, he put up pressure. I mean, he did. I'll say this. I think he was better than the most conventional stat line would suggest. I thought he brought pressure pretty consistently. However, was he the big splash difference maker? Well, they never got to play Kansas City again. To me, that was a move for Kansas City. And, well, they didn't get that
and
opportunity.
And how about this? After all of this, they're down on the goal line. They're at the 9-yard line. You know, maybe they have a touchdown and maybe they go on. They could have been preparing to play Kansas City without Mahomes this week.
Yeah.
Although, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. The way things set up, we would have been sitting here right now with a flight to Kansas City talking about Mahomes maybe not playing. And if he plays, maybe we're not seeing Patrick Mahomes at full speed.
If he misses practice all week, right.
You're Yeah. You know, and that's a whole different level of could they win a Super Bowl, which was my...
Yeah.
I don't think they were good enough to win a Super Bowl. I felt that way last week. I certainly feel that way this week. But they were one play on the goal line in Buffalo that went obviously the other way and became a 14-point deficit from maybe going to Kansas City and playing Chad Henne, who they almost drafted, by the way, in 2008. That's a whole other story altogether. But Peter King thought they were going to draft him.
He was part of that 2008 draft class.
He was the smokescreen. He was the one, the cost. Everybody got up that morning and told all the media they were drafting him. And then they drafted Flacco. So,
you know, the dream was Matt Ryan, but the realistic hope was Joe Flacco. But yeah, Chad Henne was the smokescreen, at least the alleged backup player.
The good-looking guy from Michigan.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, I mean, and look, I mean, you can always point to this play here, this play there. I mean, Buffalo had a deep shot early in the game that Josh Allen overthrew. I mean, Tyler Huntley had a chance to hit Marquise Brown, and somehow, some way, with Lamar Jackson in the locker room, it would have been a one-score game at that point. You know, we can go back and forth, but they weren't good enough. You know, even if they score a touchdown there, it's a tie game. Who knows what happens in the final 15 minutes. So they weren't good enough. But, you know, and this is where, as much as I've kind of talked about my concerns moving forward as far as whether this team's better positioned now than I felt they were a year ago, there is a lot of variance. There is a lot of randomness to what happens. There is luck involved. As much as we all like to think, it's kind of like our lives, you know, in reality, just our everyday lives, there's a lot more randomness and chance to things that happen, or, you know, good or bad. And that applies for football in the postseason. I mean, I talk about this all the time. You know, baseball, you have 162 games. Hockey and basketball, you have 82. Football, you have 16 data points. Now looking like it'll be 17 starting in 2021. Now, that's... It's a lot of variance there. There are a lot of things that can go really well for you or can go really poorly for you. I mean, you can look at teams over the years that they end up winning a bunch of games, but you kind of look, you pull back the curtain and look at them statistically and you say, wow, they really got lucky. They had their schedule laid out nicely. They ended up playing five backup quarterbacks over the course of the season. Or you can have teams that go 8-8. And you look at their statistical profile and you say, wow, how did they not make the playoffs? And they had a tough draw, or they had some injuries at the wrong time, or, you know, you had some wind. We've talked about it in passing. That wind, the wind on Saturday night, now, it's not an excuse for the Ravens because it impacted both teams. But you talk about wreaking havoc on a football game. I mean, I thought this was going to be I picked 26-24 Ravens. I thought this was a game that had a chance for both teams to be in the 30s. You know, scoring wise, and it was 17-3. Why did that happen? A big reason why: the wind wreaked havoc on special teams and the passing game. So, you know, there's a lot of
The wind screwed up the offense enough to make you have to punt or kick, and then once you punted or kicked,
and then you had problems with it, right? Yeah, I mean, and both kickers missed kicks. You know, and by the way, Buffalo, a good special teams profile this year as well. I mean, they don't have Justin Tucker. But, well, Justin Tucker missed two kicks inside 47 yards. It's unheard of. So at times, you know, you can point to the weaknesses, and certainly there are things they need to address, and we'll see how they approach that. We'll see how they try to get better. They will have a plan Ultimately, we'll see whether that what that looks like in 2021. But you know, sometimes it's just not your night, and you hate being dismissive about it because there are lots of things they could have controlled. But yeah, there were some things that were working against them, and the wind was certainly one of those. When you have the best kicker in NFL history miss two kicks that he normally makes in his sleep.
All right. Luke will be out at Baltimore Positive. Obviously, all the places we are, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, he'll be checking in. I know you got a lot of baseball thoughts on your mind. We got the Terps playing basketball. Not sure, you know, the next 2 weeks here as we ramp up into democracy and into Super Bowl time. It is going to be a little weird, Super Bowl week, not being with you down in Tampa. But, you know, we're still going to be here trying to put together Radio Row pieces. I'm going to try to track down some Ravens alums as we get up onto the 20th anniversary of Super Bowl 35. So at least we got that going for us, right?
Crazy, 20 years.
Where did you watch that game? I didn't know you in 2000.
Super Bowl 35. My dear friends, the Pottinger family. You know, Scott, their son, I went to school with.
Your dad was alive then, yeah?
Yeah. My dad passed away in 2004, but we were at the Pottingers, and you know they now own the restaurant in New Freedom that you know is a favorite of mine. But we watched a game in their basement. They had a beautiful finished basement. Big screen TV. I mean, this is before big screen TVs that, you know, this is before the days that everyone had a big screen.
They were the one in the neighborhood that had.
Yeah, they didn't have HD, but, you know, they had the full-blown satellite dish, you know, the big one that you had in your backyard. But we watched that, and, I mean, my best memory of that, I remember the game, of course, and I thought all along the Ravens were going to handle business. I thought the Giants were kind of fraudulent. Everyone thought, you know, that Vikings team that they pummeled, like, okay, it's one game. So I was confident they were going to win, but my favorite memory of that was, you know, at the final seconds, just giving my dad a big bear hug. And it's crazy to think that was 20 years ago. So, you know, the memories, you know, especially with playing the Titans, beating the Titans, you know, last week, you know, thinking about Anthony Mitchell, who I know you caught up with, and Ray Lewis taking the ball away from Eddie George. I mean,
I've been busting through the old pictures, dude. So, you know, I found this picture.
Very cool.
This is the picture of David Modell carrying the trophy in the exact spot that the Mayflowers were. It's the same picture, you know, with the Mayflowers. And then Coach from last year when he went the Ring of Honor. I'm going to put this – I got to get that special, like, glue to get it back against the wall. It keep falling down. So I am going to decorate around here at some point now that the season's over. I am of the mindset that the purple floodlights were not the whammy that I thought maybe they were because – we lost with that. My wife and I are trying to figure, was it something we ate? Was it something we did on Saturday night?
You didn't have buffalo wings, did you?
I did not have buffalo wings.
Okay, I was going to say, because that would be a big tell.
No, we didn't. I'm trying to think of what we had on Saturday. I don't even remember what the hell we had. It's terrible. Whatever we had, we won't have it again. I'll tell you that right now. Luke, you know, rest up. We'll be in touch. You can find Luke at WNST.net. Of course, all of our coverage out at Baltimore Positive, and we're on the democracy, talking to a lot of local people, as well as celebrating the 20th anniversary of Super Bowl 35, which I'm sure we will be doing. I am Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.